Hi, I'm Anne.
And I'm Judy.
And this is Track Changes.
We are two editors.
And this podcast is your next best writing tool.
Hi, this is Anne, and I am coming to you from under a comforter because that's where I could get good sound recording quality in my house right now. So there are a couple of things you should know about the upcoming interview and the next season. The first one is that we recorded these during COVID when nobody had gotten upgraded sound equipment. So the sound is pretty terrible and I'm really sorry about that. I'll do what I can. And the other thing you should know is that this upcoming episode is me and Judy interviewing each other. So usually on this show, we will have a guest that Judy and I will interview, but we thought we should give you an episode where you get to know us and what we do, and the only people there to interview us was each other.
So this is my co-host, Judy Hagee, and she runs the freelance editing business Write Justified, WRITE, a little wordplay there. And I will start by asking you about your wordplay, because it's one of the things you do and people might know you for a little bit.
Yes. When I began thinking about launching my own business and what I would call it, I do enjoy a play on words. I'm married to probably the greatest punster in the world. So some of that rubs off after a few years. But I like the idea of Write Justified because it is a technical term talking about formatting, but also because I have a pretty strong sense of justice, social justice, biblical justice. And I like that to kind of come across not only in what I write, but in the way I work, that there's a sense of excellence in the way we communicate. Mm-hmm. I think the gift of communication is one of God's good gifts to us. And so I see it as sort of a stewardship issue for us to be able to use language well, mm-hmm. and communicate effectively. And so there's that sense of let's do what we do really well. And have a sense of rightness, sort of not righteousness in the sense of holy righteousness, but let's do what we do with excellence, with grace, with authenticity. And those are a couple of things you'll find on my website as well. Just the way that we communicate has a sense of wholeness. I think in the Jewish biblical term, it's a sense of shalom, mm-hmm. that all is right around us and within us. And that's probably a little bit more pontificating and theological than you were looking for.
Oh, that's
kind of where my heart is, and that's why I like to do what I do.
Yes. And why don't you tell us about what you do? We're both obviously editors. That's kind of the gig of this show. But there's different kinds of editing. So why don't you tell us about what kind of editing you do?
I primarily focus on copy editing and proofreading. Mm-hmm. And my place in the lineup of editing would come after Anne's, where she does big picture. I focus in more on the line or the paragraph level of writing. So we're looking at things like grammar and punctuation, but also word usage and whether the way something is phrased is as clear as it can be to the reader. Mm-hmm. I think all editors, of course, are interested in getting the message across. Mm-hmm. So that's part of what I'm doing, too, in copy editing. It might be surprising to listeners to know that editing is a lot less objective than people think it is. So mm-hmm. sometimes, or a lot of times in editing, there are just some real subjective decisions to make about, hey, does this comma really help the reader understand the sentence or mm-hmm. not? And if it doesn't, then we just pull it out of there because the reader's take is priority, mm-hmm. and communicating clearly to our readers. So making sure at that a little bit more organic level that what's on the written page communicates clearly with the reader. And proofreading I'll also do, which is also that last step. It's probably been already set by the publisher, formatted. And so then the role is much less fiddling with any of the language, but much more, are all the periods, is every T crossed and every I dotted? Mm-hmm. And are the visually, is it consistent in the way the headings are rendered, mm-hmm. margins and all those sorts of things? So there should not be a lot of adjustments at that point. It's just simply a final check to make a piece as error proof as possible.
Yes, which is also impossible.
That's right.
There is always, yeah. There will always be errors.
Yeah, I think the figure I've read is that up to 5% errors in even a traditionally published mm-hmm. piece is about par for the course.
So yes.
It is a human endeavor, and it's never going to be perfect.
Is there a genre or a type of work that you prefer to do your work on, or that's the focus of your work?
Yeah, my entrance into editing came with academic material. I'd been at a seminary and I left. A lot of my contacts were faculty and students there who needed dissertations proofed and edited. So a lot of my work sort of naturally fell into that Christian nonfiction academic arena. Mm-hmm. And I still feel pretty comfortable there. I don't know that it's always the most enjoyable, but I find it enriching, actually. And so I appreciate that. And I actually relish sometimes the challenge of tracking down a citation and making sure it's properly cited. For pleasure, I like to read historical fiction and memoir. Mm-hmm. And I have also begun to edit in the fiction realm. Surprising to me, I've done a couple of speculative fiction mm-hmm. manuscripts lately. And while that has not in the past been something I've naturally gravitated to read, mm-hmm. I have found that if it's well written and I understand the genre, mm-hmm. I actually enjoy editing that as well.
Well, and I got to take a peek at one of the things you're looking at. We don't just show each other the stuff we're working on. That's highly unethical. This was a little joint working by the permission of the author. And it was a very fascinating piece. Mm-hmm. I can see why you were enjoying yourself. So do you have publishers you work with regularly, or do you have...
There are a couple of publishers that I work with, and they sort of run the gamut. I've worked for a denominational house. A lot of obviously that was theological kind of work, mm-hmm. and some of it was reprinting, bringing it up to date, something that had been around for a number of years, and the message was still good, but it needed a little more contemporary flair to it. Mm. So adjusting some of the examples and illustrations. So that was an interesting approach. I work for one royalty publisher, and so that's a bit of a ministry in that I see no payment until the book has been published in their sales. Mm-hmm. And then I work for a hybrid publisher who pays for the copy editing that I do. Mm-hmm. And then whatever individuals, independent freelance authors that I pick up. And a lot of times that comes through just personal contacts, word of mouth, conferences, mm-hmm. That kind of thing. So I have a mix of sources for work.
Yeah.
I think it's my turn.
I think it is. Well, I was going
to
ask
it's your
you.
Turn to be on the hot seat.
Okay.
Oh, well, thank you, Anne. Let me introduce my co-host to you, Anne Fleck. Anne is a developmental editor. We met at a virtual conference. Believe it or not, conferences do happen in this season. So it was a pleasure to find another editor in close proximity that we can actually get together, even face-to-face sometimes during COVID. So, Anne, tell us about what kind of editing you do.
So I'm a developmental editor. So I do all the stuff that happens before Judy touches somebody's work. And developmental editing means I'm making sure the structure of the story itself is good. I'm helping people develop characters and tell stories efficiently so that they have, you know, the room, I would say, to really get everything in there that they want to get, to have a really rich, full text. And I also work with people way before that point. I do a lot of work with people to help them learn about writing, in that I do presentations at conferences, and I am currently starting my first online virtual workshop for the winter, which is partially because of COVID-19 and partially because we live in the Midwest and nobody wants to travel during the winter. So if we can do that one virtually, I think that's better for everyone. I also try and help writers refine their process as writers for when they're sitting down and doing their writing, because writing can be really emotionally draining. If I can make a process where you have to revise your work a few less times, that means you have more energy to put into that book and into the next book. And I really try and arm people with the knowledge to make their own choices. I try and get into the process really early with them, maybe even before we have a finished manuscript, just so that they can be making choices that are really their choices about their manuscript based on my knowledge of how a book plays out. So that instead of sending me their manuscript and I read it and I give them a million notes to change, they've already got that stuff and they haven't accidentally kind of written themselves into a corner that would mean rewriting the whole book.
So would it be your preference to have an author contact you before they've even written very much? I mean, ideal world, when would an author approach you?
I like to start working with an author really sometime between zero words and sort of 50,000. And some of that just depends on the author. You know, some people have to write a lot to find their story, and some people, so I categorize writers in several different ways. So most of us have heard of pantsers and planners, which is, you know, pantsers jump in and they're flying by the seat of their pants while they're writing, and planners have it all planned out. Well, I think there's two other categories, gestators and jumpers.
Not heard those expressions.
No, that's because it's me. This is me. Point trademarked Anne Fleck. And gestators are people who hold the story in, like before they put a pen on paper to start planning or writing, you know, it lives in their imagination for a really long time. And a jumper is a person who, the minute they've had the idea, they're planning or they're writing. And, you know, you can be a combination, like these are two sets of traits. So you could be a jumping planner or a gestating pantser. And they interact in specific ways. So a gestating planner generally does just fine because they've thought about the work so long that book planning phase is not so necessary to them. So with them, it's fine if you've written 50,000 words. I do like to get in with them on the ground floor because they've already got most of that book in their head. And usually it's a few minor tweaks to make sure they don't fall into a story pitfall. They're very easy to work with developmentally because they've thought about it for so long, but all we have to do is make their jumpers. So they're going to, or their pantsers. So they're going to write it. Like, we're not going to never see any words on paper. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you were, say, a gestating planner, my job would be more saying, write something, just write.
Get it out.
I mean, because unfortunately, gestating planners tend to think about it for a long time and then they plan it for a long time. And, you know, at the end of your life, you have planned a novel you've never written.
I think I would be guilty.
Okay.
Guilty of falling into that.
That
resonate with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, with that,
you need to take your conference, conference this winter.
You could. I think we might be getting some of that in there. It's our first one. It's sort of our rough draft of conferences. Not that it will be
any pants.
We'll refine it as it goes along. But yeah. Whereas if you are, say, a jumping pantser, I would want to grab you at about 50,000 words. Because you have to do that writing. Writing is how a jumper, a jumper discovers their story through the planning or the writing. And so if you're a jumping pantser, you're discovering it through the writing. So if I nab you at 50,000 words, we have a lot of material to work with that we can turn into a plan to avoid the pitfall of most jumping pantsers, which is that you write 300,000 words. They were really fun to write, but they aren't unified by anything, and now you have to revise them all.
You have to pull them out.
Yeah. And terribly demoralizing.
Yes.
And I don't want that for writers. I like, my goal is to make writing for the people I work with.
What would you say is the most surprising thing to an author when they come to you? The thing that you tell them or work with them on that challenges them or is the hardest, but
yeah, that
not
like
what they were expecting to hear.
Yeah, well, number one is that my other goal is guide to the publishing world, which is a thing you do a lot. Editors are often somebody's first contact, so often the first question I actually ask an author is, "Well, do you want to try and publish this traditionally, or self-publish, or hybrid publish?" They don't know what hybrid publishing is usually, and we're not going to explain it because there's an episode on that later. But often that's not how they're thinking about their stories. But besides wanting to make writing fun, I also want them to be successful. And the way our relationship together goes and where it sort of starts and ends depends a lot on what they're going for. If, say, they are going the hybrid publishing route, they're going to hire someone to publish their book, essentially. And that means that I will probably suggest that they go see someone like you after I'm done with them, but just once, you know, just to kind of make sure they're not even going to get to that proofreading stage, just basic proofreading, because custom publishers are more looking for potential in the work than a work that's really finished, because they know they're going to get paid to bring the finish level up. You know, you still need a developmental editor and a copy editor, just because otherwise it's hard to see the potential. And it looks like you won't value the work that the custom publishers do. But if it's a traditional publisher, I'm going to work with them much harder. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably going to go through and do some line and copy edits myself before I pass them on to someone like you. And then I'm going to suggest they have a proofreader, because a traditional publisher is basically doing the work of publishing for free and then hoping to get paid out of what you sell. And other books aren't even selling as much, might not sell enough to pay for themselves. So they're hoping your book might also pay for those books they took a dive on, which is part of why, you know, the percentage rates of your royalty rate split tends to be so low for the author and a traditional publisher. And it's not that they're fleecing anyone. They really aren't. Many of them, nobody there is getting super duper rich, but it's just how it has to work. And part of how they're making their business model work is that they're trying to take manuscripts that need the least work done.
Right.
So I know that my relationship with someone aiming for traditional publishing is going to be long. I'm probably going to be really looking for the right copy editor and the right proofreader for their work. I mean, I really want them to get published. That's good for me when my clients get published, but also I love my clients and I want them to get published.
What percentage would you say of your clients how would you break out your percentages of your clients going to traditional, hybrid, or self-publishing? And I don't know, you've been at this a few years. I'm wondering if you've seen a shift.
I had a pretty even split right now, partially because I just had my very first editing client get picked up by a traditional publisher. I know. Well, it's also my mother. So
I sort of need to say that.
Well, I fell back. I didn't realize I was editing her work. She is the way I got into editing. Didn't realize I was giving her editorial notes, that this was a valuable service and not just me being super annoying.
This kind of harkens back to how you got into developmental editing.
Well, yeah, that's exactly.
Tell us that part of your story.
Oh, sure. So I went to school and I majored in literature, and I did not think I was ever going to work in editing, because the only editing I knew about was the type you do in a publishing house, which is copy editing, which I knew I couldn't do. I have dyslexia. And also, that's just not the way my brain works. It's pretty boring for me. I'll do it on things that I love. I can do it if I really want to aim my focus at it real, real hard. But it's not where my passion lies. But while I was in school, you know, you're supposed to analyze the literature and say, oh, here's the meaning it makes. Well, I always wanted to take it one step further and go, well, was it effective? This is the meaning it makes, but did it connect with the reader? And then I was really annoying because sometimes I was like, no, it didn't. The only people who are reading this are people who were assigned to read it in in lit class.
Honest student.
Yes. I'm sure I drove my professors nuts. But that's basically the question of developmental editing, is the way that this story is structured and told, is it connecting with its audience? How can we connect better? And it's really those big structural character, all those things. I mean, you have to have copy editing or else nobody can tell what the story is that you're telling. Like, it's just a jumble. Like, no clear communication is happening. And I work in that, well, what is the meaning? How are we going to structurally make it happen? And so having a lit major, I went on and I was a barista and a nanny, because that's what you do with that degree. And my dear mother, who is an author, has authored multiple nonfiction books, has always wanted to switch over to fiction. She just really felt called to write a lot of these nonfiction books. There was a real need. And so she wrote a mystery. And she was, you know, at the stage where you show it to people and kind of get their takes on it. Well, when she gave it to me, I sent it back to her just covered in notes. And I also said, I'm so sorry, Mom, I couldn't help myself. And my mother said, Anne, you're really good at this. This is really valuable. This is editing. And I was totally surprised because that's not what I had thought of editing as. And I mean, she asked me to do it again and she paid me for it, which was crazy. And then, you know, people ask her for writing help a lot of the time. And my mom is a writer, but she's not an editor. That's not her thing. And so she said, well, I can't help you, but my daughter's really good at this. So I did a few that way. And then some of my clients suggested other people use me. And I just kind of fell backwards into being a developmental editor, a job I did not know existed. Partially because developmental editors are almost by definition freelance. Developmental editor used to be a thing that traditional publishers kept on staff, but basically they have outsourced the responsibility for paying for that work
to the author.
And many authors don't realize it's work they need. That's which also makes it really hard to be a developmental editor, because I spend a lot of time trying to convince people they need my services.
Let's go back to that question that I banged off on earlier. Books, I'll give you an option, I guess, either books that you've read that have helped you in this journey, or books you would recommend to your clients to improve their craft.
I am ordering books right now to deepen my experience with it. A lot of what I have learned about story structure, I actually learned from lit school, and the things I think I've learned the most from are a lot of small articles, actually, which I can't remember the name of, but I am looking into the Story Grid, which is a very popular work for developmental editors, and I'll just go ahead and recommend that one to people. It does talk a lot about just those basics of, like, what is a story arc, what's your plot, what's your subplot, what are beats, you know? How do we push these together? What does a story need to look like to make it a story and not just a collection of events?
Well, let me offer two suggestions for books that I would recommend or that I have really enjoyed. One on the broader subject of writing by Stephen King.
Mm-hmm. Oh, On Writing is so
On Writing Well. I think I mentioned earlier that I didn't think I would ever like horror until I read Stephen King. And then It's like, wow, if people write this well, I will read it. You know, mm-hmm. So it's all about writing well versus the genre. Mm-hmm. And I think what I appreciated most about On Writing Well is just how realistic Stephen King is about what writing entails. It's hard work. It's discipline. It's sticking at it, and it's going to involve a lot of rejection.
Yeah.
And I remember the detail, the specifics about how often he was rejected before he was finally published. But there, you know, he's in good company. There are lots of popular authors who went through a lot of rejection before they found success. So that is just in the general
writer
writing and writing well. I think that's a worthy read. From more of a copy editing point of view, I would recommend Benjamin Dreyer's Dreyer's English. For that anyone who thinks grammar is just really stuffy and authoritarian, Dreyer's English disabuses you of that idea. He brings humor, a little irreverence to the whole subject. Things that your seventh grade English teacher told you were absolutely true about grammar and writing are probably not. I find both of those, I enjoy both of those books and would highly recommend them to people who want to work on their craft and be encouraged to realize that I can do this, even though I'm not, I was not an English major and I struggled with spelling and grammar, I can do this.
So, yes. Well,
I think that's our primary role as editors is to be encouragers.
Well, and I don't know about you, but when it comes to spelling and grammar, you can hire someone to be good at that for you.
That's right.
That's fine. You don't have to be good at spelling and grammar to be a writer. Absolutely unnecessary.
That's one of the reasons I find that I'm one of these gestators and planners. Because when I sit down to write, it's very hard for me to turn off that grammarian. That internal editor.
You're making me
say, just get it out there. I'm like, but it has to be right.
Oh, you make
and
me.
That's something I really struggle with. And I wish I had that creative ability to just let it flow. You know,
you're making me want to like put you in one of my write to publish groups and tell you all the stuff. Like, that's, I run write to publish groups. And the first thing we usually work on is just like, those first 6 months are just me encouraging people to write without thinking about whether or not it's right, which is often the opposite of what they think I'm going to do.
Right.
They think I'm going to fix their writing. And I'm like, well, first we have to have some writing.
First there has to be something to fix.
I can't.
I got that. Yeah. So I don't know if you want to include this in or not, but you know, this is the middle of October and NaNoWriMo is coming up. I'm curious about your take on that, whether you would encourage someone to do that or whether you would avoid it.
I have two takes on it. One is that in a way I feel like it sets people up for failure because you are not going to finish a novel in a month. So from my perspective, most novels are 80,000 words. And the likelihood that you are going to draft 80,000 words in a month is low. Most people on a very ambitious month might hit 50. But on the other hand, I think that being encouraged to just write and write every day is good. And if it's NaNoWriMo, as in just write it, don't worry if it's good, just get it out there, I'm all about that. I think
it's a little bit what you're talking about with your write to publish class.
Yeah, I'm just like, something. Just write something. I mean, I think as a writer, I also, in my helping of people develop good writing processes, I never suggest anyone sets themselves an amount of words they need to write in a day.
Okay.
That's actually a really good way to psych yourself out.
Yeah, right.
Because some days the words aren't going to come. They're just not going to come. You know, you're exhausted, you're tired, you're sad, you're angry, you're hungry. I mean, or it's just not kind of like your brain just hasn't gotten there. It's kind of an unaccomplishable goal. Whereas if you say, well, I'm going to sit down and write for 15 minutes. Now that's possible. You might write the same word over and over and over again, but you can sit down and write for 15 minutes. And I also don't encourage people to sort of be like, force themselves to be project monogamous. You know, like, it's not, well, I have to finish this book before I start the next one. Now, I don't encourage people to have 800 started books and no finished ones. That's not great either. But trying to say, well, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write 500 words on this specific novel, there's no better way to make yourself hate writing. You got to sit down and write, but, you know, you follow the inspiration when it strikes, and it's not always going to be for the work you're working on.
True. Yeah. So my jury is still out on whether I'm going to take the plunge into that or just try to be consistent. I mean, rather than feeling like really bound to that, but just being consistent in writing something.
Sitting down.
I do have a couple of things floating around in my head, and I've been working a little bit at one of them. So.
Well, and I do really think, so I love On Writing. Like, it is one of the books I recommend to almost all people, partially because it just does that expectation setting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it tells you how to write well all the time, just because one slim book can't, although it is a very well-written book that is a pleasure to read. But it does the expectation setting of what it is like to write and sets them up to have good relationships with their editors and with their writing. But I also think that there's this thing where Stephen King sits down and writes 2,000 words every day, which is great. This is fantastic. He can do that. But for most people who have a job outside of writing, this is just not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people feel like, oh, unless I'm writing an hour every day or 2 hours every day or 1,000 words or 2,000 words every day, like, I'm not really a writer. This isn't discipline.
Yeah.
And I encourage writers to just write at least once a week. It doesn't even have to be every day.
Okay.
Just once a week.
Well, you hear lots of stories of people who, you know, the mom raising a family and writing 10 minutes here and 10 minutes there, mm-hmm. and at the end of 5-10 years having something. And, you know, even I admire that. I have a hard time grabbing, you know, being able to do something productive, it seems like, in 10 minutes. But, you know.
Yeah, I need 10 minutes to get my brain into gear.
To get ready to write, yeah. Yeah.
And I'm
you know, thank goodness, we all work differently. And,
yeah,
that works for people. God bless them.
Yeah, well, and I have a writer who's been, you know, she is a mom. She's a mom of special needs kids. She has a really demanding life. And for her, what she's done is, you know, not even every Saturday of the month, maybe one or two Saturdays a month, she went to a coffee shop and sat down and didn't have anyone shouting at her and wrote. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for her, that was more of a experience of, this is my place where I'm in charge, mm-hmm. and I get to make the rules. Mm-hmm. Nobody gets to ask things of me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she's essentially written 10 novels. She hasn't published them. Like, she's just getting around to that part now. But sometimes it's more about finding out what works for you as a writer than about fitting some perfect expectation. I mean, writing every day works for some people. For mm-hmm. me, it doesn't. I can't write every day. I have to have the bucket fill up before I've got anything to write.
Well, good.
Okay. Anyway, so there, I hope that that helped you as a person who's trying to write.
Yes, it does. And I think probably one of the things that we're trying to do with this podcast is help writers have those realistic expectations.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of why we teamed up, because
yeah,
we often are at, lots of people think they need an editor, but mm-hmm. are not aware of the various levels of editing that are involved in bringing a book from concept to production. And so we're here to shed a little light on that
and
encourage them along the way.
Well, and between us, we cover every part of that editing experience. And professionally, being able to refer people to you is fantastic.
Well, likewise.
Yeah.
So, it's a teamwork. And I think that's the other thing, important thing for people to remember, is it's a team effort.
It is.
I mean, you can often think of writing as a solitary endeavor, and it is. But to get something mm-hmm. to print, to publication, takes a whole team. And I like to say that I, you know, my relationship with a client is a duet, not a duel. We're not fighting yeah. with each other. But the bigger picture is I'm just a piece of a team.
Mm-hmm.
That's 5, 6, 8 people, you know.
Well, I mean, how many people work on touch a book before it hits print successfully? You know, I mean, later we do that interview with Joy, and I counted all the people in yep. her book that had, and it was 20 people.
Right. Right.
It isn't, I think if anything, we'd like to tell people that this is not a solitary pursuit.
Right.
And I hope people listening to us will reach out and find some teammates.
Good.
I mean, maybe they'll be us, but maybe not.
That's right. I think that's a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, this is Anne coming to you from under a blanket. If you listen really carefully, you might be able to hear my kids having a tantrum in the background. Judy and I really hope that our conversation helped you not just understand who we are, but also understand your writing as something you do with a team and not something you have to do all on your own. Our next guest will also be an editor. Her name is Dori Harrell, and she will be talking to us about imposter syndrome and how, as editors, we can help writers feel more confident in their work when we're giving them criticism. So, see you next time.
Thanks for listening.
And don't forget to turn on Track Changes.